Let us give a warm welcome to Randall Williams. Randall.
Right. I have a friend here today who I wanted him to see me read some poems. He's a George Bush. And Secret Service is outside.
Is that George?
Yeah, that's George. This is beautiful actually from up here. He is glowing. All right. I'm Randall Williams. I just completed a collection of 34 political poems in the vein of Auden's In a Time of War. And so I'm going to read from this section right at the outset. And hold your applause, because I'm just going to kind of cycle through some. Okay. First poem is about a protest in Washington. Today, even the cops are calm. Trees reflect in their helmets while they oversee a polite public march, excuse me, quiet, around the Capitol. Here is an antique machine's trial run. Atoms unaware of voice and bond. Say citizenry and envision 10 years of stadium speakers sounding like us. The president inside his house dines without concern, says he loves democracy. He continues along with his course, thinks nothing of citizens who knock and go away. The difference, dear reader, between request and demand is a readied red brick. Jesus never walked. He only hung there on Golgotha for 30-odd years. He never overturned money tables or appeared on the outs with Rome. When moths gnawed into manuscripts, his followers preached from palimpsests, pyred inquiries, packed lacunas with plans. What surprise is it now? Podiums and sand, bombastic requests that welcome war, studded doors that swing wide for rumors. Mustn't there be an early service? These tank tracks echo ahead of a late galloping? Let us mourn. Love's language locked in their stolid necropolis, their impossible sword of peace, their bloodied baton of dogwood. I toss my room's contents at the dot matrix teeth beaming outside my window, pearls from a waterless ocean, sun on a weatherless day, a smile which sends our train through the grass. Within its gaps, cloth crowns, replicated relics, exit signs, virtual tightropes, dreams which do not belong to the dreamer. Flat accidents waiting to happen. Drivers swerve to better see this kibitzer over traffic, this rented ideal of pleasure, giddy as a soccer game with no goals. The kids who mimic it implode on the playground. Within every glance, pilots pat and kiss another enameled name. To the binds which yearn for peace, those cells which crave not air but movement in the way that there is no object without space. Pockets seem a diver's weights and fire contained in head. You envision a Midwest you've never seen, while standing amid a village green, halted at a doorstop, ruled by the discriminating logic of skin, the curious fear of wind. To this I say, burn the food in your cabinets. Take the sofa to the roadside at night. Fasting and risk beget buoyancy when our ship sinks due to the chandelier no one noticed or needs. Minds rot in safety, which means there is only one way out. This poem is from a protest in Chapel Hill, right down the road, at the post office. Across Franklin Street, beside a letterbox, a counter-protester mocks us while wearing a Stars and Stripes bikini. Boys surround her as if she is their mascot, an anorexic Lady Liberty, a picture at the center of a brick wall. I think about the scene's inception, the moment they said, yes, we will show those hooligans, we will rub vacation and flesh in their faces. Her body is this thin adjective, her tit offers only its own image. And this is what we're fighting for, the boys say by patting her back, hoping to win one war after another. I just moved out to the country, and so I see a lot of suburbs, and so this one's kind of in that vein, and it has a political angle too. So, on my way to town, I passed these plastic pods that all landed last night. Gray fans humming as if on rockets, convex dishes making synchronized swivels toward the sky. Exurbia revolves around its satellites, its complex codes being beamed by leaders with Botoxed brows and lamps reflecting at retina's edge. Through this lunar landscape, flags stick beside well houses from tree stumps on SUVs' back gates. Red and white barcodes bought and displayed as parking passes. When the music stops, all the chairs get cul-de-sacked. Support this war or be a ghost of nations. Walking through the mall, I spot uniformed men and women in Banana Republic, sorting supplies, and I think this war is bought in tank tops. Battleships blown by sails of linen, televisions, answering machines, doghouses, internet connections, all point to this predicament. Even banners of peace are bought with dollars of war. Our weakness, this slimming gluttony by which we live, is the blue felt of a collection plate of a crusade. So we walk with guilty purses and culpable billfolds, murder made in simple transactions by generals unaware of their own medals. This poem is about the Republican National Convention that's coming up. Wide shot. Woman in kitchen, working over white counter. Child runs in, grabs green grapes, darts through the door. The announcer, then in a voiceover, says, "In your home's heart, there is a microscopic invasion, a network of bacteria, malicious and lurking to strike you or a family member at any moment. You might not even know. Fortunately, we have a Texan for this Manichaean matchup who penetrates the shadowy regions where germs live. He even goes to those hard-to-reach areas to battle them on their own turf. He is an exclusive chemical solution, perfectly concocted." Okay. So I'm going to leave the kind of political set. This poem, Diorama, is one that I wrote about a favorite photograph of mine by Carl Toth. It's a family standing in the ocean. It was taken like maybe in 54. And it also kind of integrates an army camouflage manual and a glossary from a book about CB radios that I got. Once I brought a shadow box to Mrs. Shorman's class, an armada attached to an anchor, a simple photograph of a family standing in the ocean. My scene featured a son withholding his bird-chested breath, a daughter wavering on whether to hide or show two dimes, a mother using her tongue to fawn some taste from the air, a father grinning as the head of this absurd mallard. In the corner, a cardboard embrasure hid among cattails. Inside, it was wall to wall with bears. I entitled my piece, "Figure 80 Shows a Decoy Town," or Dien Bien Phu. When my teacher asked me to explain, I squirmed and said, "Sperm meets egg in water." Then I poured a glassful into the box. We may now see the undertow hit their brittle bronze legs. This next poem is on the abolishment of marriage, and it's for my friend Barry, who's sitting in the audience. We've had a few conversations about marriage, and it's kind of strange that I'm organizing against the state marriage amendment proposal. At the same time, I'm not really down with marriage as an institution, but that's just kind of one of the contradictions that we wanted as an option. But this is kind of my personal take on marriage. Welcome, wheel. May we commit to be happy axles, flat as gantry for the president and his pontiffs to ride. May we be inside of one another and celebrate the slow trickle of apartment homes from your vagina, casters for the kitchen. These planets, like our friends, move in quadrilles. The lonely constellations shoot arrows into nothing. Darling, I've secured you like a bond. We have an agreement to remain hearthside, headed where we're driven. Okay. I have two more for you. This one is, I went to Oregon, and I had seen logging around here, but never on the scale of what's going on up there. Just terribly, horrifying and impressive kind of wood mills. And they have these kind of stacks of logs with kind of giant sprinklers that go over them. And it's really kind of ominous. And so I wanted to capture that kind of ominousness in a poem. It's called Medford Mill. He steers a blight down Crater Lake Highway, past the table rocks, the glistening RV lots, the yellow fields of star thistle, the thrift shops. When the pumice approaches, he stops. Arches of water. Signs of smoke. Alarm clocks beep underground. He starts to douse his storied corpse. He keeps a drowned boy dead by heaving air in spurts. It smells of subdivisions, dog bedding, a Mount McLaughlin made of small squares, surrounded by an oil sea, black machines, black pyramidal piles of pine and mulberry. Behind the scene, some cruel act lies, an earth destroyed and made tender until it dies. And this last poem I have this uncle who's kind of brought into the family, and I really despise him. He's pretty awful. He's a bigot, and I just can't stand him around Thanksgiving table. You know, it just makes me disgusted. But when I helped him move recently to Florida, he came out of the shed where all of his stuff was being kept, and he came out with these like glowing pair of the most beautiful cowboy boots I had ever seen in my entire life, and he wanted to give them to me. So I was in this kind of moral dilemma, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't want to wear this dude's boots, you know? Yeah, right. So this is a bigot's boots. When I loaded the silver box that you rented to drive south, I did not know you would give me boots. Your old boots, brown and marbled in high gloss, with rainbow-stitched peacocks and flames rising from the sole. I was pleased to pack your globe, even took time to locate the Union of Socialist Soviet Republics. As you watched, sandbags stacked beneath your eyes, glasses like radar, bandage on your foot, I remember how you laughed at obituaries, how you ridiculed compassion, senility, how you cheered the bottle tosser and ignored the child being pinned. I invite holidays. You are framed by the grave, now with one foot proving my case. But I have your boots, gifts, ornate symbols of your past. They leer like closeted demons. I look and wonder if they have banged on a whites-only bar stool or kicked the ass of some oddball in the corner. Do I burn these haunted, hateful things? Should I consume your prejudice and fire? Should I set my flame to your racist pride? Or do I let the peacock's pink eye remain open when I kiss my men? Do I tap the souls to blues and march my heels to chants of Pete's? Can your history, which is my own, be cleansed by sage? Boots are not the wearer, I know, just leather and string and wood. Yet symbols are rare and chosen, and now needed. Tonight, I reach for Sherman's torch, and Atlanta flickers under my feet. Thank you.
Thank you, Randall. That was great. And hi, George. How are you this morning? He's pondering. He's looking up in the sky, although he doesn't realize it's a ceiling. Although I don't think he knows the word ceiling.